Okay, so let me begin by thanking the organizers for the opportunity to present this talk in this most interesting conference. So really, thank you very much. I'll be talking about relational observables and quantum diffeomorphisms on the world line, and I will explain what I mean by this. This is based on some of my previous work, and in particular on my PhD thesis at the University of Cologne under the supervision of Professor Kiefer. So, here's a brief outline of the talk. We'll discuss classical diffeomorphism invariants on the world line and how we can understand the dynamics in a diffeomorphism invariant way. Then we'll move on to the quantum theory, and we will discuss a method of construction of quantum relational observables and a notion of relational quantum dynamics, and this will be based on a set of tentative postulates for the theory. We'll also discuss the connection with the Page-Wooters approach. And I'll very briefly mention the calculation of effects in the early universe, and then I'll finish with some conclusions. So diffeomorphisms are a symmetry of the field equations in GR. And for this reason, presumably all of the current approaches to quantum gravity must face the following questions. The first is, what is the relevant space of physical states and which operators act on it? And how are the quantum states related to probabilities in the absence of a preferred time? What is their dynamics? And because quantum gravity is also a quantum theory, it must face the measurement problem in the sense that we need to understand, or we would like to understand, what is the origin or nature of probabilities and the Born rule, or if this should be modified. So today I want to focus on what I think is the root of the problems, that is, how can we deal with diffeomorphism invariants at the quantum level? And to do that, I will focus in mechanical toy models in which space-time is one-dimensional. So that's why I call it the world line. And this is done simply to avoid the few theoretic complications of regularization and anomalies, which, although important, I think only cloud our conceptual understanding of these problems. And I will maintain an analogy to techniques and concepts used in canonical gauge systems. So one way to understand the dynamics in a diffeomorphism invariant way is to employ the concept of relational observables, which we have already heard about in this conference. And the way I like to think of this is that observers or experimenters, they record the dynamics of fields in local regions of spacetime using reference fields chi, which function as generalized clocks and rods that define generalized reference frames. And the outcomes of their experiments are the values of all of the fields relative to the clocks and rods. And these values are the relational observables. Now, these observables, which are denoted by this symbol here, they completely encode the dynamics in the region of the experiment, and they can be seen as conditional quantities in the sense that they yield predictions, which are the values of the fields, based on a certain condition, which is the observed value of the clocks and rods. Now, because they only make reference to the relations among the field values, they actually make no reference to the abstract spacetime point. So they can thus be seen as constant spacetime scalars for each fixed value of the clocks and rods. And for this reason, they are diffeomorphism invariants, or more technically, they are invariant extensions of tensor fields. So let's see how this works in the case of the world line. We have a one-dimensional spacetime with a set of fields. Q are scalars. E is the Einbein. It is a scalar density. And in this case, diffeomorphism invariant simply means that the functional form of the action remains the same under diffeomorphisms that preserve the boundaries. So diffeomorphisms amount to a relabeling of the arguments of the Lagrangian, and the field equations have essentially the same form. If this is the case, the Lagrangian itself is a scalar density, so it must have this form here, where C is the first class Hamiltonian constraint. Now, the Einbein serves as the volume form on the world line, and its integral over any interval gives you the elapsed proper time. And for later reference, I just mentioned that any canonical representation of proper time is a phase-space function, possibly only locally defined, that is conjugate to the constraint. So let's see how we can model the dynamics of world line relational observables. What we need to do is choose a reference field that will play the role of a clock in the world line. And this amounts to finding a diffeomorphism for which the functional form of the clock is the identity. That is, the clock marks or ticks the points in the world line that serves as the coordinate. If you can find such a diffeomorphism, you can define the relational observables as constant world line scalars, the images of which are simply the pullbacks of any world line tensor F evaluated at the instant in which your clock has some value S. Now, for the clock to be monotonic, this generally only happens in a certain interval I of the world line. And in this case, it is convenient to write the observables in this integral form here, where this normalization delta is the Fadev-Popov determinant. It is defined via its inverse by this formula here, and it is essentially the pullback of the Poisson bracket of the clock with the constraint. Now, this integral construction is well known, and one can show that it actually gives you a diffeomorphism invariant in the sense that infinitesimal diffeomorphisms of this quantity vanish on shell. So what I would like to do is to translate this construction to the quantum theory. And to do that, I will adopt the Dirac quantization procedure, which I think many of you are very familiar with. And essentially, I consider that there is an auxiliary Hilbert space equipped with some inner product with respect to which the canonical quantization of the constraint is self-adjoint. So that means the constraint is an operator that has a complete orthonormal system of eigenstates. Now, the physical states are the superpositions of the null eigenstates so as to obey the quantum constraint or Wheeler-DeWitt equation. And if zero is in the continuous part of the spectrum, then the states are not normalizable because the energy delta function diverges. But in this case, you can regularize the inner product by defining the physical inner product or the refill-induced inner product, which I denote by this or by this bullet here, in which you essentially drop this energy delta function. And the meaning of this is only the degeneracies K that label the physical states, only them are physically meaningful. So only them should be orthonormalized. Now, if this definition, the space of solutions of the quantum constraint that are normalizable with respect to the physical inner product is the physical Hilbert space. And it is on this space that we want to define the observables. Now, remember that in the classical theory, proper time was conjugate to the constraint. In the quantum theory, you can define proper time states to be formally conjugate to the constraint eigenstates by this formula here. But it is well known that this does not necessarily yield a complete orthonormal system with respect to the auxiliary inner product. But today I take this to be irrelevant in the sense that what I care about is the physical inner product, the physical Hilbert space. And so I suggest that we could define observables by this formula here. PE is a projector onto an eigenspace of the constraint. This bracket is an anti-commutator, and F is any world line tensor. Now, this formula may seem a little bit exotic, but it is justified because in the particular case in which the spectrum of the constraint spans the real line, it reduces to the familiar integral expression that is directly analogous to the classical case. And in particular, this PT is an improper projector or effect operator onto the proper time states, and it is analogous to the classical gauge fixing delta function. Now, by construction, this definition gives you an on-shell Fadev-Popov resolution of the identity. And what does that mean? This means that the observable associated with one is the identity on the physical Hilbert space. And I think this is a really important property. Now, even in the case in which the spectrum of the constraint is not the real line, but it is a more general spectrum, I still maintain that this could be the correct definition because these observables have the correct quantum dynamics, which is given by this equation here. This is the correct dynamics because exactly the same equation holds in the classical theory if you replace commutators by Poisson brackets and so on. Now, this is for proper time. If you want to choose other gauges or other clocks, the definition is a little bit more complicated. I don't have time for the details, but essentially you just replace this PE projector onto the constraint eigenspaces by a more general operator that I call the Fadev-Popov operator. It is defined by this formula here, which is an analog of the classical definition. And the important thing is that there is a discrete degeneracy sigma that is a generalization of the positive and negative frequencies of the relativistic particle. So now we have this definition of relational observables, and we can apply them to several toy models. And just as an illustration for you, of course, an archetypical example is the relativistic particle. As you all know, it is defined by a mass shell constraint. And you can choose several different times, but just for an illustration, the Minkowski time gives you observables that have this very simple and well-known form. And if you apply the definition that I just discussed, you can show that the quantum observables, their matrix elements between two physical states of compact support, has this form here. The important thing about this is that if you look at this red operator here, you will see that this is simply a symmetric quantization of the classical observable. And I just showed this example because this shows that this definition is reasonable in the sense that it yields a symmetric quantization of the observables, and it has the correct dynamics given by this clock value S here. Okay, so let me now suggest a set of postulates to make sense of this quantum theory. The first postulate is that the quantum state of a diffeomorphism invariant system corresponds to a ray in the physical Hilbert space. Observables are self-adjoint on shell operators. Observers who employ a certain clock record the dynamics of tensor fields according to the relational Heisenberg picture operators. This defines the quantum reference frame associated to the observer's clock. If the system is in a physical state psi, a measurement of a tensor relative to the clock results in an eigenvalue of the relational observable with a probability given by this Born rule here, where these states are the eigenstates of the relational observable. After the measurement, the state of the system is updated to an eigenstate of the observable in the reference frame of the observer. But you can't change reference frames by performing a change of basis in the physical Hilbert space, because you can insert a complete set of eigenstates of other observables. And this is a unitary transformation if the observables are indeed self-adjoint. Now, this set of postulates suggests that we can see the wave function as relative initial data in the sense that a choice defines the evolution in the reference frame adopted by an observer. So now we have the physical Hilbert space, and we have relational observables that act on this physical Hilbert space with a set of postulates. But it is important to relate this to the Page-Wouters formalism, which we also already have heard about in this conference. And the Page-Wouters formalism uses conditional probabilities. So how does our formalism relate to it? So the first thing that I want to mention is that if you define conditional expectation values in the usual way, so that means by this formula here, which uses the auxiliary inner product, then you can show that the quantum averages of the relational observables that I have defined, taken with respect to the physical inner product, are equal to weighted sums of conditional expectation values, where these weights are the probabilities of the system to be in a certain sigma sector, say a certain frequency sector. And the expectation values are taken with respect to states that absorb the Fadder-Popov operator. So this shows that the statistics of these relational observables is a conditional one. Now, in the particular case in which the constraint can be written as a clock Hamiltonian plus a system Hamiltonian, if you can solve the eigenvalue equation in terms of the clock energy eigenvalue, you can repeat the proper time construction that I showed you before, but now for this eigenvalue, and you obtain a sort of clock proper time gauge. And if you follow the definition of observables that I showed to you, you obtain observables that have this familiar form, which coincides with the G twirl, and they obey the usual Heisenberg equations for the system Hamiltonian. So we derive the system dynamics from the Wheeler-DeWitt constraint. So this can be seen as a sort of Heisenberg picture derivation of Page and Wouters, whereas the usual derivation is done in the Schrödinger picture. Okay, so I'm almost out of time, but I just want to mention how this construction can be adapted to certain toy models of the early universe. And the problem is, if we consider realistic toy models, it may be difficult or even impossible to solve the constraints exactly. So the construction of the physical Hilbert space of the observables and the assessment of unitarity or lack thereof of the dynamics has to be done in an approximate way using some sort of perturbation theory. So I just want to illustrate how this could be done. So let's consider a simple toy model of the early universe, which is a De Sitter background with some perturbations. It is governed by a master Wheeler-DeWitt constraint given here. And the idea is that you can solve this constraint order by order using a weak coupling expansion with respect to the gravitational coupling constant, which I denote here by kappa. What is this? This is simply a WKB expansion, but instead of expanding with respect to h bar, you expand with respect to kappa. okay? And you solve the constraint order by order. Now, the interesting thing is that up to the lowest non-trivial order, the constraint can be rewritten as an effective Schrödinger equation if you rescale your states by a certain operator. This effective Schrödinger equation is unitary with respect to the standard L2 norm for the rescaled states. But in terms of the original states, this norm is simply a gauge-fixed inner product, which is the perturbative analog of the Fadev-Popov resolution of the identity I showed you before. And this rescaling operator, you can show by a concrete calculation that it is simply a quantization of the Fadev-Popov determinant for a single sigma sector, which in this case corresponds to an expanding universe. Now, this is nice because you can solve this equation. For example, if you assume that this state is an extension of the usual Bunch-Davis state, and you can compute corrections to the primordial power spectra of scalar and tensor perturbations. So this shows that we can also go towards phenomenology in these toy models. Okay, so I have presented a possible formalism for the systematic construction and interpretation of relational observables, both in the classical and quantum theories, in a model-independent way. In this formalism, I take the operator version of the Fadev-Popov resolution of the identity as a defining feature that corresponds to a choice of clock or reference frame, which in turn is a regularization of the inner product. The quantum observables have the correct quantum evolution, and if they are indeed self-adjoint, this implies the unitarity of the physical propagator. Changes of reference frames are changes of basis in the physical Hilbert space. This corresponds to a generalization of Pagen-Wouters in the sense that averages of these relational observables can be related to conditional expectation values, also for more general forms of the constraint. So I believe this addresses conceptual issues at the interface of quantum theory and gravitation, and it can be useful in several toy models such as quantum cosmologies. But of course, there are still a lot to be done, such as further exploring connections with other approaches, and in particular, applying this to realistic toy models of the early universe, such as slow ball models, a generalization to field theory, and much more. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for the very nice talk, Leonardo. I see that Carlo Rovelli has a question already.
Did you try to compare this expansion with kind of things that Bianca Dritic was doing? She was also, I mean, let me put it this way. These relational observables are what are the relational, are the cost, evolving constant of motions on which in the quantum gravity community have been used since ever. And but I'm trying to focus on what's different here. I think you have this Fadev-Popov specific construction, which is seems different to me. And then you have this perturbative expansion. And these kind of things were worked out by Bianca Dietrich some time ago. Did you try to compare with what she did?
No, I haven't checked that yet. Of course, I'm aware of that work. There is a difference, it seems to me, because there, first of all, I should mention that as far as I know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, she uses the construction of the observables in terms of a series expansion, which is equivalent to this integral construction that I showed you in the classical theory. But in the quantum theory, it's not clear to me if they are both equivalent because of vector ordering issues and so on. So that's the first difference. Another difference...
Maybe the same observables, but the step to the quantum theory, the factor ordering comes different. Is that the point?
Yes, I believe that is the point. Although,
what is the criterion here that for you is important to do one rather than the other?
Factor ordering.
Yeah,
it's so for factor ordering. The criterion is just essentially this formula here. So
is this commutator your contribution, right?
So it's a symmetric ordering of these operators. Now, to compare with what Bianca Dietrich did, also with Tambonino and others, as far as I understand, she expanded the observables themselves, and she looked at also commutators and so on. Whereas here, I first expand the constraint, and then the space and everything is constructed perturbatively from that. So I am aware of this work. I would like to compare the two, but I haven't done it yet.
Can I still make a comment? Do I have time? I appreciate the novelty and the technical aspect of what you're doing, but I want to make a general comment. This is the kind of things I was trying to do, and people were trying to do a lot in non-perturbative quantum gravity, and the way Bianca and Thomas, many people work. At some point, I thought that it's easier to shift. Because these calculations are horrible. And the point is that they're horrible sort of before getting to the point of what one needs. Of course, a particle on a line is something, full quantum gravity is more complicated. Yeah. So the hope of doing these kind of things too. And this is why I shifted from, just for clarity, I was calling these things evolving constant of motion. At some point, you certainly see why this language. But I shifted from that to the idea that instead of doing this, which is horribly complicated, just work on the unconstrained Hilbert space and write the, consider the operators there and write transition amplitudes there. This is a big shift for me, and it simplifies dramatically the conceptual structure. So you don't have to unpack everything and unravel sort of gauge fixing things. You can work with a non-gauge fixed way, but things are conceptually well defined on the space of on the. So instead of defining the operators, just define the expectation values. Essentially with the formulas that you're doing. So I wonder whether the same technical contribution you're given can be used in that far easier to use conceptually and concretely context.
Yeah, can I just give a brief answer if there's time? So I completely agree. I completely agree. And indeed these calculations get horrible very fast. But one thing that motivated me to look into this, there is an old paper by, I think, Summings and Woodard from 1985, I believe, that they discuss the construction of invariant extensions of gauge fixed quantities for general gauge theories, not for gravity, but for general gauge theories. And what they show there is that if you construct these very complicated canonical operators in the operator-based theory, they can correspond to simply inserting the non-invariant operators in the path integral if you define the path integral properly. So one of the motivations that I wanted to do this work is to see, okay, if we have a well-defined notion of these operators in the canonical operator-based theory, do they indeed correspond to simply inserting the non-invariant operators in the path integral, which of course is much simpler. So that was one of the motivations, and that is one of the things that I am analyzing now. I didn't get to it because there was this whole definition in the technicalities. Because if you can indeed establish this relation, then indeed the whole program with the transition amplitudes, I would be very much on board with that. Because also from the canonical theory, from the operator-based theory, you would have this equivalence. And it would be much easier to work with transition amplitudes.
I don't want to monopolize the time. So Alex, stop me or if...
Could you maybe move this to the either Hangout session or on Slack so that we can try to stick to the schedule? But let's thank our speaker again. Okay.